Hold up. What was that? Boring. No flavor. That was as bad as those leftovers you ate all week. Keke Palmer here. And it's time to say hello to something fresh and guilt-free. HelloFresh. Jazz up dinner with pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Now that's music to my mouth. HelloFresh. Let's get this dinner party started. Discover all the delicious possibilities at HelloFresh.com.
Ryan Reynolds here from Mint Mobile. With the price of just about everything going up during inflation, we thought we'd bring our prices down. So to help us, we brought in a reverse auctioneer, which is apparently a thing.
Mint Mobile Unlimited Premium Wireless. How to get 30, 30, to get 30, to get 20, 20, 20, to get 20, 20, to get 15, 15, 15, 15, just $15 a month? Sold!
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Hello and welcome to the Runner's World podcast with me, Rick Pearson.
And me, Ben Hobson.
Today we're speaking with Richard Blagrove about how much strength and conditioning runners actually have to do.
We're answering the question.
It's a big question.
It's massive. It's not actually. It's actually, he's great.
Yeah, he's clarity itself.
He's clarity himself. And I think the biggest takeaway for anyone listening will be that it's really not that daunting.
Yes,
what
agreed.
He says.
Agreed.
Like, everyone sort of hears, oh, I've got to be doing this and I've got to be doing this. And then like he, you know, and he uses, you know, he suddenly goes like bilateral and plyometrics. And, you know, if you're not up on your terminology, you might be a bit like, oh my God, what the hell am I talking about? But thankfully, he's very good at explaining exactly what he means and the simplicity of it all. And like, and we dive in a little bit into your newfound love and routine in the gym.
Yeah, some bonus content there for real fans. Yeah, I think what I like about Richard Blagrove, he works at Loughborough. So he's a man at strength and conditioning. He knows, you know, very, very qualified. But he also has an appreciation for runners don't have endless time for this stuff. So let's do something twice a week that has like science-backed benefits that you can probably complete in, let's say, 40 minutes.
But on the flip of that, he also brings in a whole suggestion of like...
Oh, that's right, yeah.
If you've only got like 5-10 minutes every day...
Yeah.
Equally as good, and here's a way of doing some
sort of microdosing
your strength and conditioning. So there's literally no excuses now. He delivers two different approaches which will both benefit all your running. So hopefully anyone listening who doesn't do any strength and conditioning, and I include myself,
but not for long,
I do a bit but not enough, and this really will hopefully, it certainly encourages me to go and like do more and be a bit more diligent.
Exactly, yeah.
Accountable.
Yeah, it'd be interesting to know what any of the listeners think about this. So if you've got any strength and conditioning tips, perhaps sort of exercises not mentioned, or just give us a little history of what you've been up to, let us know. podcast@runnersworld.co.uk.
That's the one.
Hey, look, should we bring on our guest of the week?
Let's do it.
Guest of the week. Here in the studio, guest of the week. Sometimes on the phone, could be an athlete. This week, we're talking about strength and conditioning, and we're here with a bona fide expert on the subject. It's Richard Blagrove. So, Richard, thanks very much for coming on the Runner's World podcast.
Yeah, thanks very much for the invitation to come speak.
No, it's great. Could you give us a quick sense of your experience and background in this area?
Yeah, sure. So at the moment, I'm a senior lecturer in physiology at Loughborough University. I'm also the program leader for the Masters in Strength and Conditioning. I've been working in academia or universities now for about 15 years, but alongside all my kind of academic and research responsibilities, I've very much been a strength and conditioning coach. Going back 15 years or so, I started working quite a lot with middle and long distance runners down at St Mary's University, which is quite close to Teddington and Twickenham. And a lot of your listeners probably will know that's where Parkrun started. So at Bushy Park. So yeah, the running community around there is very, very vibrant. So I was working with a lot of runners in that community, and I guess kind of unintentionally specialised a little bit in strength and conditioning support for those types of athletes. And yeah, I've been coaching alongside all my kind of academic responsibilities ever since then, really.
Right, let's get down to the brass tacks. How many times a week? Here we go.
We want answers.
How many times a week should runners be doing strength and conditioning work?
Yeah, so I mean, with my kind of research and scientific hat on, like the majority of studies that have investigated the use of strength training with runners tend to find benefits at twice a week. Some of the studies use three times a week, but in my experience as a strength and conditioning coach working with runners, like three is probably quite a lot, particularly for more recreational runners that have got busy lifestyles and so on. So if runners can aim to be hitting two strength and conditioning sessions a week, they probably are going to get some really meaningful benefits, particularly after a few months of engaging with that sort of work. I guess an alternative design, particularly for those that do have very busy lifestyles and they've got a job and a family and are struggling even to fit in their running training, there is a kind of alternative design that hasn't got as much research evidence associated with it, but one I've used quite a lot with runners over the last 5 years. And that's kind of splitting S&C up into what I would term sort of training units, or little kind of microdose training sessions, which only last 10 to 15 minutes. And those are sometimes a little bit more manageable for runners to organise around their own running training as part of warm-ups or straight after a run, often in the comfort of their own home as well. So yeah, doing something small every day would be an alternative.
Yeah, let's get into that, because that sounds good. So that's a daily thing. So that's sort of like a daily minute, a daily 10, 15 minute little strength workout. What does that look like?
So it could be something different every day. And so there's a training technique called plyometrics, which I imagine a lot of listeners would have heard of before, which is essentially jumping, hopping, skipping type exercises. And we know that those exercises are really good for developing reactive strength, and also good for bone health as well. And runners could do sort of 50 foot contacts or 50 repetitions of different plyometric exercises as part of a warm-up, and that prepares you quite nicely for a run. On a different day, you could do some body weight strength work, so for example some single leg glute bridges, maybe some step-ups, maybe some calf raises. If those are fatiguing, you could runners could put those after a run, which might only take 15-20 minutes at a time. On another day, they could do a sort of trunk or kind of core stability type session. And so these little kind of microdose units through the week, they don't always have to look exactly the same, because it would obviously get boring doing it 5 or 6 days a week. But they could look a little bit different. But you end up covering off all the main sort of training activities and bases that you would put within these sort of two strength and conditioning sessions a week if you were to organize it like that.
And it's quite nice to break down, I guess, as you did there. You've got sort of lower limb, core, you could do upper body, like you could almost break each chunk each day into sort of like an area of body, right? Like that's quite a good way of doing it.
Yeah, absolutely. And if a runner's been out and done like quite a hard tempo type effort or some sort of interval training, they probably don't feel like doing single leg squats or glute bridges or whatever, so doing 10 minutes of more upper body and trunk based work would make sense on a day like that. Whereas if they're going out for a more easy run, like incorporating some of the plyometric exercises or the lower limb strength work on one of those days would probably make a bit more sense.
So I think, Richard, that we did a piece that was inspired by some of the stuff you talked about in terms of S&C on the Runner's World website. People can check it out if they want. And it talks about, I think, six or seven, we badged it like the kind of six or seven exercises, mainly gym-based, I think, that runners actually need to do. Because I think a lot of runners can go to the gym and feel a little bit overwhelmed by what they see. Can we break it down to six or seven? And if so, what would they look like? What would they be?
Yeah, thanks for including some of my work on the website, first of all. I try to keep session design and the types of exercises that runners do within a gym-based setting as simple as I possibly can. Like the research will tell us, again, that we need somewhere between about 7 and 12 sets of lower limb work within a session to get some meaningful benefit. And so within those 7 to 12 sets, I would try to pick maybe three exercises. For a more experienced runner, it might be four. The first exercise ought to be something bilateral, so something like a back squat, something like a Romanian deadlift, which is a hip hinge exercise, or a deadlift from the ground. And then I would usually pick two unilateral or kind of single leg exercises. So something that looks a bit like a lunge, like a split squat or a reverse lunge or a lunge in place. And then something that resembles kind of like a step up. So starting off with like a dead leg step up and then moving on to a barbell step up and then ultimately like a single leg squat. So if runners can do sort of 3 to 4 sets of each of those 3 or 4 exercises, that will accumulate to the sort of 7 to 12 sets of work for the lower limb that we're after.
Yeah, that's good. I love that. I love how simple that is, because I feel like Ben and I actually, in running terms, are quite interested in S&C, I think. But even with our kind of knowledge that we've accumulated, I think it was really refreshing to hear from you about, like, actually, I can break this down to sort of 6 or 7 exercises that I need to do twice a week, and I'm going to get most of the benefits that I need. In terms of like the like upper body work, how much, yeah, what would you say that needs to look like?
Yeah, so runners probably do need some upper body work. Obviously, they don't need loads because of the nature of the sport and the kind of biomechanics associated with running gait. But like I would tend to prescribe like a pull and a push upper body exercise for runners. So a push exercise, I guess the most simple version would be like a press up for those that are fairly new to strength training. Or you, alternatively, you can do like an overhead press with a barbell or a dumbbell. And then pull exercises, again, the most simple one is probably like an inverted row, which is hanging from a bar and you pull your chest towards the bar. Sometimes you see people do those with like a TRX or other kind of suspension type system. And alternatives could be like a single arm dumbbell row or a bent over row with a barbell. And so, yeah, you've got quite a nice balance there between an upper body push and pull exercise, which might be 5 or 6 sets of work.
Yeah, I think that this is, because we always talk about strength and conditioning, but I kind of think that the strength bit is the bit that people look at, and the conditioning, the second word, gets kind of lost in the mix.
Yeah.
And I always think that the upper body is very much the conditioning side, because obviously when we talk about running, you don't think you're going to be using the upper body particularly, but that's, you need to be stable, right? Like the stability in the upper body and the spine needs to be robust, because otherwise you're going to twist and turn too much, and there's all those sorts of, then you've got forces coming into play which affect your gait cycle. So I guess that's where it's important for runners to not neglect the upper body stuff.
Yeah, absolutely, for all those reasons that you've just suggested, that if we're changing the way in which we're producing force against the ground, which is using the lower limb muscles, we obviously need to counteract some of the additional rotations and stability demands which are being placed on the upper body. And you'd be surprised how much you kind of utilize your body, particularly if we're running up a very steep hill. Like, it's probably a little bit more important for middle distance runners who have to sprint quite regularly as part of interval training sessions and then within races. And any sort of competitive runners that are engaged with sprint finishes at the end of races or kind of mid-race surges, like, you're going to start to utilize the full body and the upper limb as well as part of those sorts of efforts.
Rich, can we talk a little bit about traditional core exercises, because I think you might be slightly more suspicious about this than some people. A lot of runners are going to think, so I'm going to the gym and I've got to lift all these things, and then I've got to do loads of core as well. Right? I've got to get myself on the stability ball. I've got to be doing the plank the whole time.
9 hours of planks.
yeah, and it can get overwhelming. And actually, but my understanding of your approach is maybe actually some of the exercises you've already described that you might do in the gym, i.e. a step up or a squat, they're actually working the core in a way that maybe allows you not to have to do so much of that traditional core work. Is that right? And could you explain your philosophy on that?
Yeah, you've summarized it really nicely there, actually. That, like, certainly the trunk and the core are an important sort of group or set of muscles that we need to be conditioning. So it does need to be in there somewhere in a strength and conditioning program. But I guess my problem would lie with any kind of runners or athletes that, like, core stability type exercises are the whole S&C program, and they're maybe doing it 3, 4, 5 times a week, and there's no sort of proper strength training in there. And so I'd very much see, yeah, sort of traditional core stability exercises as supplementary, that you might have 1 or 2 towards the end of a program for particularly lateral muscles and some of the anterior sort of six-pack type muscles that we might not have directly hit as part of strength training sessions. But as you say, the majority of muscles around the trunk get a really, really good conditioning sort of activation stimulus from some of the exercises that we've mentioned already, so for the lower limb and the trunk. So if runners left those out, it probably wouldn't be the end of the world. But if they want to include 1 or 2, it's probably going to be a little bit beneficial.
Is there any way that, like, a runner at home or just is able to assess their core? As in, would they be able to identify, is there a sort of a key things that you look for so that someone can judge how engaged or how strong their core actually is? Because I wouldn't really genuinely know for myself. I can kind of think like, well, I think I'm pretty stable. But like if I went and someone demanded that I did an exercise, which was to clarify how good it was, I wouldn't have a clue. So is there sort of like a, you know, if you can do X, Y and Z or just generally like how you position your body, is there like an indicator of a good core?
I mean, with my scientific howl, the answer would be probably no.
Right, good.
Because, I mean, yeah. The kind of core musculature has never been defined particularly well. Like people kind of say, oh, it's the muscles that are stabilizing the spine, but those go all the way from the neck all the way down to the knee, if you include the hamstrings as well. So it's almost all the muscles within your entire body. But, I mean, there are sort of indirect ways that, like certainly S&C coaches and some even national governing bodies have advocated over the years to try to sort of, yeah, indirectly assess people's trunk control and stability. I mean, particularly at GB rowing. So like rowers obviously get a lot of lower back pain. So they've worked quite hard to try and develop some, I guess, core stability tests. And I've used those with runners a little bit. So yeah, positions like, I'll try and describe this on a podcast. So
yeah.
If there's like a side hold position. So if you lie kind of sideways across like a bench or a chair and you get somebody to anchor down your lower body, so your kind of upper body is like hanging off the chair, if that makes sense, but you're on your side.
Yeah.
And then if you take your arm off the ground, so you literally just kind of suspended your upper body in the air, you've then got to hold that position for as long as you can. If runners can get somewhere around 2 minutes on that, they've got pretty good capacity around the trunk. And then you can obviously do that same position with somebody anchoring down your lower body on your front and then also on your back. So that would evaluate sort of back extensor capacity and then your kind of abdominal capacity. And I mean, they're okay, those sorts of tests, to get a bit of an impression of what you're kind of asking around people's capacity in those different muscle groups. But I mean, there's no suggestion that the duration you can hold those positions is predictive of injury or performance in runners, as far as I'm aware.
Yeah, no, that makes total sense.
I think I could get injured trying that one, Richard, actually. I think there'd be an injury risk in me even attempting that at Corfu. I want to talk about load, because I think, again, this is an area where there's probably quite a lot of conflicting literature, and runners are like, I don't want to be a big, bulky person, so presumably I don't need to lift heavy, and then we're told we have to lift heavy. Where do you sort of come to on that in terms of, like, I guess we're talking about in terms of reps, aren't we, really?
When you're ready to pop the question, the last thing you want to do is second guess the ring. At BlueNile.com, you can design a one-of-a-kind ring with the ease and convenience of shopping online. Choose your diamond and setting. When you find the one, you'll get it delivered right to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off your purchase. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
Hey, it's Danny Pellegrino from Everything Iconic. Ready to upgrade your style game without blowing your budget? Check out Quince. They've got all the good stuff, shirts and polos, activewear and fine leather goods, all at 50 to 80% less than other high-end brands. And the best part? They're all about safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get that luxury vibe without the luxury price tag. Hit up quince.com/upgrade for free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. That's quince.com/upgrade.
Even when we're on a budget, we still deserve nice things. Quince is a place to scoop up stunning high-end goods for 50 to 80% less than similar brands. They have buttery soft cashmere sweaters starting at $50, luxurious Italian leather bags, and so much more. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get the high-end goods you'll love without the high price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/style for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Yeah, so to answer the first part of your question, there's very, very little evidence to suggest that if runners engage with two or three sessions of strength and conditioning a week, at least for a few months, they're going to put on any sort of muscle mass at all. Like the volume of work that we've kind of described so far, so doing maybe three or four lower body exercises, two or three sets of each, so we're doing 7 to 12 sets per session, you do that twice a week, that's not going to be sufficient volume to put on any kind of meaningful muscle mass, particularly when you've got all the running training alongside it. And so there seems to be very, very little risk. And it's a little bit of a myth that runners are going to get big and bulky by engaging with heavy resistance training. But to come back to the question of intensity, like, it's important that if we want to get stronger, we are trying to move some sort of load, and just the basic principle of progressive overload, like we're trying to stress the neuromuscular system in order to acquire more strength. And so for runners that have never engaged with strength training before, they can probably achieve that just with bodyweight exercises, at least for the first few weeks, particularly on when they're doing the single leg work. But then quite quickly, they're going to start to adapt, and then performance is going to plateau, and they're going to start to find the exercises quite easy. So they're going to have to overload it initially, maybe just with medicine balls or resistance bands. But then it's probably sensible to start moving on to working with dumbbells and barbells, because we can load the sorts of exercises that we've mentioned a little bit more easily and safely using those sorts of equipment.
And you talked about heavy resistance there. So what, in terms of weight that you, and starting off with body weight, because we've had discussions on here before that actually sort of heavy, lifting heavy, sort of lower rep stuff, which is predominantly, I guess, utilized more by sprinters, but certainly can help all runners with their conditioning, because we're doing a lot of endurance and a lot of cardiovascular work, which sort of low weight, high repetition is kind of same sort of area, whereas running doesn't have any of that big sort of power stuff to it. So is that important too?
Yeah, and I think those messages that you've just mentioned are certainly appropriate, that we're, like, relatively speaking, we're looking to move like quite heavy loads through fairly low repetition ranges. But when I refer to low repetition ranges, I mean anything less than about 12 repetitions. And again, particularly for novices, so those that are just starting out strength training and haven't done much of this sort of work before, they probably can go as high as 12 repetitions and maybe even 15. And as long as they're working hard and at the end of the set, they couldn't do very many more repetitions with the weight that they're using, they're probably going to get the same sort of strength adaptations than working at very, very low reps. So like just 2, 3, 4 repetitions at a time. And I mean, that evidence is actually quite new. It's only really been the last 5 years that even just the strength and conditioning industry generally has started to move to that line of thinking. And that would be the same for older individuals and young athletes that are new to strength training in any sort of sport. But then as we get more experience, like, we definitely need to add a little bit of load and intensity to the exercise. And so it's more sensible to bring that repetition range down towards, yeah, the 3, 4, 5 repetitions per set, rather than go any higher. And so, yeah, when I say sort of heavy load, I mean anything between about 3 reps and 12 reps for most runners. We don't want to scare people off by saying, yeah, you do 3 reps and you've got to go really, really heavy for 3 reps.
You've got to PB every single lift. Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, yeah. So yeah, going a little bit higher is completely fine for a novice.
If anyone's listening to this, Richard, and says, oh, that all feels like quite a lot of work, what's the carrot in terms of strength and conditioning? Why is it worth runners properly engaging with this stuff, do you think?
Yeah, it's two main things, which I think you guys will certainly be aware of, and probably the listeners as well, that like most of the research has been directed at the use of strength training for performance outcomes. And we've got fairly good evidence that engaging with strength training a couple of times a week for at least 3 months is going to improve running economy. And our running economy is how much energy that we're using at a submaximal intensity. And so for 5K, 10K, half marathon, a marathon, like, the better that we can get our economy, the less energy that we're using to run, the better. And so it seems that strength training mainly has effects, or like mechanistically has effects on economy, which then improve performance. We also know it improves sprint speed, and as I mentioned before, with competitive runners and middle distance runners, that is really important. And then the second area is based around trying to reduce the risk of injury. And scientifically, we've got a little bit less evidence for that, which is I guess probably surprising for some runners. But it certainly makes sense that, like, tissues within the body that tend to get injured in runners, so like tendons and muscles and ligaments, they obviously have a certain tolerance to repeated stress. So therefore, if we can raise that tolerance by making the tissue stronger, essentially the body and those tissues can hopefully cope with higher volumes of running. So that's kind of the theory, and we have got some evidence to suggest that might be the case. So it would make sense to be engaging with strength training so we can, yeah, increase the volume of running, and we've got less likelihood of getting injured. There's probably a third area, which I'll just mention briefly, which is much more global area, that certainly as we age, so as we get into our late 30s and 40s and 50s, the kind of running stuff aside, we know that we'll lose muscle mass and bone mass, and connective tissue starts to degenerate. So there's definitely benefits to engaging with strength training just from a general health perspective, aside from the running.
Some big wins there as well. Some quite easy wins, I think, that people can go, I need to go to the gym. This has made me want to go. So that's good.
Well, I've started going and basically based on what Richard said, I'm doing six or seven.
What are you doing?
Exercises in the gym. Oh, right, yeah. So Richard, let's see if this is gold standard. But I'm doing all kind of like, let's say the rep range is, let's say I'm doing 8 reps.
Yeah.
Let's just say that average. So I'm doing calf raises, weighted on the kind of, you know, that kind of barbell that's fixed in place.
On the Smith machine, yeah.
The Smith machine. And then I'm doing a deadlift, I think it's called a trap deadlift.
Trap, on those, yeah.
When you kind of stood in the middle of it, doing a back squat. Then I'm doing a reverse lunge, because I've been told reverse lunges are potentially a little bit nicer on the knee, which has been an issue for me.
Yeah.
And then, I do a bench press and chin-ups. So that kind of push-pull for the upper body. And then for a gold star, I do, what they're called, step-ups as well. But that's, with a barbell, but no weights on them. And then gold star doing some...
core.
What they're called, dead bugs.
Yes.
For a little bit of core.
That doesn't sound far off at all, a gold standard. That sounds like a really well-rounded, nicely balanced program, and that sounds spot on.
I can do it all in 45 minutes. Do it twice a week, and it's actually it's for me. It's taking the stress out of strength and conditioning for me, because I'm like, I do it twice a week. I know what I'm doing, and I'm feeling the benefits in a way that when I was just trying to fit stuff in, I was probably doing more in some ways, but just much less benefit, and just kind of feeling a bit kind of overwhelmed by the strength and conditioning part of training.
Yeah. No, it sounds like you've got a really nice balance and volume within that program, that as you say, there's 6 or 7 exercises. You've got a couple of bilateral ones, the squat and the trap bar deadlift. You've got the single leg exercise, the reverse lunge and the step up. So that's essentially what I described before. And then you've got the bench press is a really good exercise, and particularly if you've been doing press ups a while and you're sort of hitting 15 repetitions comfortably, like you obviously need to load that exercise, and doing a bench press is it's quite a nice progression from that. So that makes complete sense. And you say pull ups as well.
Do some pull ups. Yeah.
So that's absolutely great. Yeah, I mean the calf raises we haven't really spoken about much, but the calf and Achilles is obviously, I think it tends to be the area of the lower body that's like the second most common injury with runners, and because at the exercises that you mentioned before, that's the deadlift and the squat and the lunges, like they don't really overload the calf and the Achilles very much, and so for most runners that I work with, they'll tend to do 1 or 2 calf Achilles type exercises. So having that loaded on a Smith machine makes complete sense. And then you've got the trunk exercise as well.
Oh, I smashed it.
There you go. All I need to do now is get better at running. But the S&C is not holding me back anymore.
It sounds like a great case study.
Well done, Rick.
Great working example for everybody.
yeah. But how much you're lifting, I want to know. Those are the big numbers.
Well, this is a funny aside, but one of the new columnists at Runners World is called Sophie Raworth, who's a very good runner and also like BBC broadcaster, and she's got into lifting heavy weights as well. And we're in a deadlift competition, but she's really strong, and I'm currently losing. So I don't want to give away the exact weights, but I'm currently losing that one. Yeah.
Well, it sounds like you're on the path to success, mate. So that's well done.
Richard, thanks so much for your time coming on the podcast and speaking, with such clarity about an area that I think can be quite confusing for runners. So I hope everyone who's listened to it is going to get something out of it. So thanks for your time.
Yeah, no problem at all. I really enjoyed it.
So that brings us to the end of this week's Run As Well podcast. A huge thanks to our special guest, Richard Blagrove, and to you, of course, for listening.
Oh, God, right at the end. You had to listen all the way to the end, but then you get the gold. You get the real gold. You can subscribe to 3 issues of Run As Well for just £5. Head to runaswell.com/UK/podcast offer to get this exclusive listener offer. Please subscribe to the podcast if you haven't already. Wherever you're listening to this, make sure that you share it with all your running friends because they'll probably like it too. And they need to do strength and conditioning because they probably don't do that. Thank you for listening. You will hear from us next week.
Planning for your next trip? Elevate your travel style with Quince. Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And it's all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to quince.com/pack for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Ever catch yourself eating the same flavorless dinner 3 days in a row? Dreaming of something better? Well, HelloFresh is your guilt-free dream come true, baby. It's me, Keke Palmer. Let's wake up those taste buds with hot, juicy pecan-crusted chicken or garlic-butter shrimp scampi. Mm. Hello Fresh. Stop dreaming of all the delicious possibilities and dig in at HelloFresh.com. Let's get this dinner party started.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free. Or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hey, everyone. Craig Robinson here. I want you to check out the Ways to Win podcast, brought to you by Ford and the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. On Ways to Win, Coach Cal and I will discuss leadership lessons we've learned. We know all about the days spent perfecting your craft outside of the limelight and have knowledge to share about how strength, inspiration, encouragement, and adaptability are the key ingredients to drive toward your dreams. And those same ingredients can be found in the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. So check out my podcast, Ways to Win, and also check out the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. Learn more at Ford.com. Built Ford tough, built Ford proud.